Support for Impact Cincinnati comes from Murray and Robin Sinclair.
Good morning. This is Impact Cincinnati and 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. The presidential election is just 5 days away, and many say the race is still too close to call. The only thing most pundits agree on is that Ohio could decide the election. We'll talk about Ohio and its role this morning. Joining me are Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors, Jean Beaupre, UC Professor and Co-Director of the Institute for Policy Research, Eric Rademacher, and WVXU's political reporter, Howard Wilkinson. You can join in the conversation, email your questions to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
I think a great place to start is with you, Eric, in polling. You had a new poll that came out yesterday, the Ohio poll. Tell us a little bit about it and how this compares, perhaps, to polling you've done in other presidential elections this close to the election day.
Well, you know, one of the things that really stands out this year is it's been very remarkable. We've done three polls now that have shown a very close presidential race in Ohio. And it does remind you of some of the other polls that we've done where the candidates have been neck and neck. In fact, two elections ago, at the very last projection that we made, we had President Bush ahead with 50.1% of the vote over John Kerry, and he actually, I believe, won by about 50.8%. So the polls have shown it close in Ohio recently, and it looks like, you know, the end of this year, we're going to see another remarkably close election here in Ohio.
You have a reaction to that, you guys? Do you expect that?
I absolutely agree. I mean, you know, if you're talking about a poll, in the case of the Ohio poll, that had a 2 percentage point lead for Barack Obama, statistically not significant, really. This is going to come down to who can motivate their base. Who can motivate the voters? Because there aren't that many undecided out there. What was it? You know, it was like 1% that said, don't know.
Right. And one of the other dynamics this year that's a little different, a little new to the way we have to think about this, is this increase in the number of people who have already voted. So we have to think of the electorate or the election day vote as a very different thing than just those people who cast vote on election day. In that poll that we're talking about, the one that we just recently finished, you're talking about the potential for maybe up to 30% of the vote to come from that early voting, and maybe even higher. I think the most recent estimate that came out was about 1.2 million votes have been cast in Ohio already for president.
And, it used to be, we used to say there were two campaigns. There was, you know, the campaign. It's like the red zone in football. You get down to the 10-yard line or something, and you get to the last 10 or 7 days, and it was the GOTV, the get-out-the-vote effort. And campaigns have had to rethink their strategy. And I think pretty clearly the Obama campaign, who relies very heavily on getting their vote out, their vote is harder to get out, probably started that effort earlier. Were very open about it. You know, that was the message that they delivered in every form that they could. And I think Eric's probably seen that in his polling to some extent.
Right. In the polling, you do see an advantage for the president among those folks who have voted already. The question is how much of the proportion of the vote ultimately that will be.
Right. Right. And that's the thing that, you know, the Obama campaign understands that on election day itself, Republicans are more likely to come out than Democrats in Ohio. And so they try to build this firewall of early votes and try to run up the numbers as high as they can. They claim to have done that, but then there's a question of, you know, how do you look at that? How do you look at who, the independents, the non-registered people who didn't vote in primaries?
And it still comes down to getting 50% plus one.
Sure.
So it may be that they, you know, even if their vote is out earlier, that doesn't mean they've gotten to 50% plus one when the, you know,
that's
when everything
exactly
shuts
right.
down.
Well, but I don't think there's any question that if President Obama does prevail in Ohio, we will look back to that early vote, get out the vote effort as a major reason for him winning the vote in Ohio. I think Howard's point about Republican turnout is exactly right. And that could have an effect on future presidential elections and the way they're run in Ohio in a way that's fairly astounding.
Well, one thing they are certainly doing is paying a lot of attention to Ohio. Howard, you want to give a rundown of, I mean, over the next 3 or 4 days, you're going to be traveling all over the place.
Yeah, if I can keep track of them, we'll start with Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan are holding a huge rally tomorrow night in Westchester. I expect a very big crowd. He's bringing along with him not just the candidates' wives, but all five of his sons, and the list looked like about half of the members of the Republican side of the U.S. Senate are going to be there with him, and then they're going to spread out across the state, because I don't think you'll see Romney that much anymore, but you'll have, you know, dozens and dozens of these surrogates moving around the state over the next 3 days. Michelle Obama is going to Miami University on Saturday. What's that about? That's about early voting, about motivating young voters who tend to support Barack Obama. Barack Obama himself is coming on Sunday to Fifth Third Arena at the University of Cincinnati, which is exactly the same location that he came to 4 years ago on the Sunday before the election.
Wow, right.
And holding a rally, again, aimed at younger voters.
So that's a lot of visits. Do you anticipate that'll be it? Will Sunday be it, or are we still going to see candidates around on Monday?
It depends on your definition of it. You can't turn on a TV. You can't turn on the radio. Won't be able to look at a newspaper.
I'm not so sure we're going to see, you know, the principals, but we're going to see tons of surrogates and all kinds of stunts and press conferences and, you know, get out the vote kind of thing. Now it's not so much about rallies and big events and the candidates themselves showing up. It is about personal contact with voters and trying to get them up. Mm-hmm. Out of their couches and out to the polling places on Tuesday.
So they're going for their base at this point, not so much trying to convince people to vote.
Right, and also the weekend voting on Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, which is an important factor particularly for the Obama campaign, because they think that they can pull that off. They've got this Souls for Polls that many of the black ministers, not just here in Ohio, but in a lot of the key states, are trying to get their congregations to go out and vote early. And that if that happens, that's an overwhelmingly Obama vote.
I think it'd be interesting to watch, because, you know, you would wonder why would they run TV that late in the game. But I think what they would do at that point is pull out the message that they think will, you know, really be the one that gets people. Now, is that a negative message, you know, if you don't go out and vote, you're going to end up, you know, in 4 years of misery? Or is it that you've got to vote for whoever it is on either side, because they're our savior in some form or other?
It's interesting, as they continue to come to town and people come out, they don't seem to have any trouble drawing a crowd. So are those the people that already were going to vote? I mean, who's coming out to see them?
Well, generally they are the people that you know, are going to vote anyway, and they're the people who work in the campaigns and actually make those phone calls and knock on those doors. It's to encourage them to go out and work harder. I mean, that's basically it. And to recruit more of their friends and neighbors to do the same. That's what it's about.
Yeah, and I think, too, that, you know, these last-minute efforts, one of the things that folks may want to watch is pay very careful attention to where these candidates are going, what mm-hmm. states they're going to. That's going to tell you where they believe this election is decided. And we're down to probably 5 or 6 states where the election will be decided. And going into those states, you know, the candidates, they're tired. They know their campaigns are tired. They know their workers are weary. The electorate is certainly tired. These events also have the effect of giving one last shot of energy to make sure that at the last minute, everything comes through the way the candidates have planned with their strategy and tactics.
What about the latest ruling on provisional ballots? And maybe, Howard, you can explain that. The Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled again about how those ballots can be counted.
Well, I mean, basically they said that, you know, they put a stay on this order that said people who show up in the wrong polling place. You can cast provisional ballots, and those ballots would be counted. That probably would have caused quite a great deal of confusion for boards of elections around the state. It would have, in a very close election, could have created some chaos.
So I just want to put this sort of in English best I can, because it starts to get confusing. We keep hearing about the right church, wrong pew.
Mm-hmm.
That's if you go to the right polling place, but there are two tables set up there for different precincts. If you go to the wrong table, then your ballot still will be counted at this point, if that's the case. Is that correct?
Yes.
But if you go to the absolutely wrong building, if you're supposed to go to place A and you go to place B,
and
then
you insist on casting a ballot, you will be given a provisional ballot, and that ballot will likely be rejected Ohio law.
Right.
And in either case, this is a question, not a statement, provisional ballots are not counted for some period of time.
Exactly.
And so we don't know the number of provisional ballots, but my presumption would be if the margin of victory, you know, is smaller than the number of provisional ballots, conceivably we could not know until they can be counted, which, if I'm not mistaken, is November 16th.
17 days.
17 days.
Mm-hmm. After the election.
After the election.
Well, and in previous elections, we've sat here and talked about, you know, the next phase of the campaign when we've known it was very close like this, and we haven't talked too much today, I don't know if we will, but about all the lawyers that campaigns have ready to go, ready to land in different states like Ohio. So maybe part of the reason we haven't talked much about it is that it's not a new sort of aspect of campaigning anymore to have these folks ready. And we can expect that if it's close, as Gene said, and there's any kind of funny business at the polls that people see, or the vote is within the margin of this provisional ballot issue, that it's very likely we could go into a recount scenario, we could go into a needing to count the additional vote scenario, and there will be legal representation here by both campaigns to try to
and
achieve that
end. And not just here,
end.
But in a number of other key states as well.
Right.
Including whatever whatever the arrangements are made in places where they've been hit by the storm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do want to talk about that, too. We're going to take a short break, and we'll continue our discussion about the presidential election in Ohio, among other races, right here on 91.7 WVXU.
Support comes from Mount Auburn Presbyterian Church, a progressive faith community worshiping in a historic setting near the UC campus, welcoming and affirming of everyone and offering a diverse music ministry where faith is exposed to reason and reason is enlarged by faith. Sunday worship, 11 a.m., 103 William Howard Taft Road, mountauburnpresby.org.
WVXU is supported by PNC Wealth Management. With 160 years of experience, PNC's financial professionals strive to provide an expertise that can help you achieve your financial goals. To learn more, you can contact Cheryl Rose at 513-651-8405.
Support comes from the CSO, bringing the community together through music. This fall's One City, One Symphony initiative includes listening parties, broadcasts on WGUC, a public celebration, and more leading up to performances of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. You can find out more at cincinnatisymphony.org. Presenting sponsors, the Hale U.S. Bank and Jewish Foundations.
This is Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Marianne Zalesnik. We're talking today about the presidential election and election in general in Ohio. My guest today, WVXU's political reporter Howard Wilkinson, also UC professor and co-director of the Institute for Policy Research and co-director of the Ohio Poll, Eric Rademacher, and Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors, Jean Beaupre. We'd love to answer your questions. You can email them to impact@wvxu.org or post them on our Facebook page. That's 91.7. WVXU. So you started to talk a little bit about the storm and what's happened in New York. A lot of people are saying they're just going to have to cancel this election. Is that going to happen?
No. We're not going to cancel any election. But it is going to create a whole lot of logistical problems and problems for elections officials in those states trying to probably in many cases change polling locations, you know, at the last minute. And then getting the word out to voters.
It is. And theoretically, at least, there has to be relatively equal access by all voters to a polling place.
Sure.
And, you know, that just may not be physically possible.
Yeah, it wouldn't
be hard to conceive of a class of voters that would have standing in a court to raise that issue.
So if the election does go through, as you all believe that it will, on Election Day without any postponement or anything like that, is that just going to mean there are going to be all kinds of lawsuits?
Well, as a result of Sandy, I would be surprised. If the race is close in a number of these swing states, perhaps not. One of the reasons why we're answering this way is because two of the most affected states where there are the likely to be the greatest trouble in getting voters to the polls are known to largely vote Democratic and are very likely to do so regardless of how many voters have difficulty getting to the polls based on what happened with Sandy. If we were talking about a scenario where perhaps Virginia or North Carolina got hit harder, or even that more of Ohio, for example, was out of power than is currently the case or was the case yesterday, we might have a slightly different answer. But in this particular case, those two states are very likely to go decidedly for President Obama, and that margin is not really likely to change substantially because of those who can't vote.
And if it did, if it came out that those two states went Republican, you think that would cause...
That would do it, but I would be very, very surprised to see that.
I can't even imagine that.
I think there's another aspect to the storm that I don't know whether you want to talk about it or not, but I think the president couldn't have... I shouldn't say that. I'd be careful. I don't want to say she couldn't have asked for something. It was a great advantage for him and came at an absolutely perfect time. I mean, very close to Election Day. It was a chance to look incredibly presidential. There was no way that his opponent could top that. In fact, he'd be better off not to, so he wasn't looking like a wannabe. Mm-hmm. And, it struck me that it was similar to some people said that Romney created plausibility by his performance in the debates, and I think the president went back to looking like the president again in a way that... Yeah. I don't know whether your survey can measure that kind of impact, but I think it was strong.
I mean, there comes a point. I mean, this happens rarely, but in a political campaign for presidency where you have an incumbent where he has to take off the candidate hat and put on the president hat.
Right.
He has to. He has no choice.
Right.
And the photographs of him and Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey – I think had a great impact. You see them all over the social media, you know, people talking about why can't Republicans and Democrats work together like this all the time. And I think, you know, marginally, around the margins, you know, it helps him politically.
I can imagine still shots of him hugging people, you know, in the middle of the debris and, you know, things that just... It's a great.
Do you think they'll turn that into ads though by this weekend? I mean, and will that look like they're really sort of capitalizing on somebody's disaster?
I don't think they'll make ads out of them. They don't have to. I mean, there's so much, you know, all over the social media, all over the newspapers, all over the TV. They don't have to do that. That's free media. So they can concentrate on their, as Gene said, the final message that they want to get across, the one point that they want people to take with them to the polls.
Yeah, and I think that for the race itself, the major impact that the hurricane had was that, you know, it did certainly stop either a momentum that was going at a pretty good pace or was slowing, depending on what state you want to talk about and how you want to look at this. The question now is, if indeed the race was more or less becoming set at that point, the race does need to reset starting again today, and how both of the candidates and campaigns try to reset. The most plausible way that the hurricane itself could come into the weekend would be it does provide an opportunity to talk about bipartisanship a little bit.
Right.
But it's a very thin line, and I don't know whether the president's team will try it or not. That obviously has been one of the key themes that Romney has been emphasizing. So it does provide an opportunity. I just don't know whether you can get it in there without it looking like you're taking advantage of the situation.
And to talk about what is the proper role of federal government in a national disaster, a natural disaster like this. You know, there is a difference between the two candidates on that.
Sure.
Gene, you're looking skeptical.
I'm in a little different place. I can see in a 30-second commercial, you know, three little 1 second images that just show him being presidential. You know, I guess there's probably a risk involved, but you know, there's a million of those images, and you know, I think that they could select some and they'd be embedded in other kinds of things.
Well, the thing you got to be careful there, strategically and tactically, if you have a situation where because of the hurricane, you had an energized side for Romney that had lost a little bit of its steam. That kind of ad is going to re-energize mm-hmm. that right. group and could actually backfire. So I think you have to be careful yeah. about how you may or may not try to sneak that in.
I think you're better off letting the social media and the traditional media carry that message for you, you know, rather than risk exactly what Eric's talking about.
What about you all mentioned Governor Chris Christie and how he and President Obama are obviously working together on all of this. Was that a slap in the face to the Romney campaign, or was it just all gloves are off because of the terrible disaster certainly that New Jersey is facing?
I don't know that it was a deliberate slap in the face to Romney. I mean, you know, you have to look at Governor Christie. His state's been devastated mm-hmm. by this thing, and he was looking for help. And, you know, he knew, you know, New Jersey, as many states, has limited resources to deal with this kind of thing. So, you know, he was grateful for the help of the federal government and the president in particular.
But well, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was going to say, staying on the theme of political cynicism, we could also point out that he's up for re-election right. in the not too distant
yes.
in a Democratic state. And he's a Republican governor who has sided in a fairly adversarial election, mm-hmm. Very closely sided with the Republican nominee. Politically, it certainly, among his constituents, probably doesn't look bad that they're getting along pretty well. But, you know, we can put a lot of political cynicism in all yeah. this. The bottom line is that there is major devastation in New Jersey, pretty heavy devastation in New York City, and the fact of the matter is, even if we didn't have an election going on, we would need to have governors and state resources and the president and federal resources dealing with this issue. Because if you've seen any of the pictures or know anyone that's there, the disruption and the destruction and the billions of dollars of loss, it's really monumental.
Turning away a little bit from the presidential election, moving to Ohio's Senate race, Josh Mandel, the state treasurer, challenging the Democratic incumbent Sherrod Brown, one of the ugliest races or most vitriolic races many have seen in a long time. Your take?
Well, it's certainly one of the most unusual races. I mean, given the fact that you know, you have Josh Mandel, who was relatively young, and you know, he's been in the state legislature. He has served for a little while as state treasurer, and now he's trying to make this very large leap to the United States Senate. He hasn't had to do much on his own because of the super PAC money. It's up to like $30 million that's come into the state from the super PACs, beating Sherrod Brown, you know, every day like a rented mule. And I've never seen anything like it. I mean, you know, Sherrod Brown has his supporters and he has his super PAC money too, but it's only about a third of what's being spent against him. But still, he leads in the polls.
And you know, given what you see on TV, I was surprised about that. His opponent, you know, got some ground early on.
Mm-hmm.
That
oh, yeah.
really looked like for a while
it
there
did
it was
some damage
be a race.
To it, yeah.
And
right.
you know, I couldn't look at that race and tell you why it shifted back, just based on public accounts. But something, you know, something did that. Now Brown may also get some great benefit from the Obama campaign, from the get out the vote. He needs that same vote.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, maybe helpful in that regard.
Yeah.
What's your polling showing here?
Yeah.
Well, right now we have essentially the race in Sherrod Brown's camp. It's just beneath the margin of error. Sorry about that. It's about 5%. The margin error is a little higher, but it really is trending in that Sherrod Brown direction. But it's definitely within striking distance. And a wave of votes for Romney on Election Day in Ohio, mm-hmm. I think, could well bring Mandel very, very close and perhaps over the top. But as you say, there's a little bit of difficulty on top of all these other things of really getting a good handle on that race because of the amount of air that the presidential race is sucking up out of the system. And so some of the dynamics that we normally see in a Senate race, they're a lot harder to find. Some of the patterns and trends are a lot harder. And as Howard said, I think one of the really unique things about this election is the degree to which, in some ways, outside forces, and Ohioans have traditionally really not liked outside forces coming in, but the degree to which there's been a lot of outside money, a lot of outside actors having real influence on the back and forth of this race.
Has that outside money helped the economy in Ohio to actually pick things up? I mean, could have had that kind of a strange effect.
It'd be good if you owned a TV station.
If you own a TV station. Maybe most of those are owned by companies that are outside of the state of Ohio.
Right, anyway, maybe hotel chain, bed and breakfast. Maybe
what you don't want to own is an automobile dealership because you can't go on the air during this time period. You can't afford the time.
Yeah, there you go.
Final comments as we wrap up. What are you expecting come Tuesday? I'm not asking you to predict winners. I won't do that. But just what are we going to see on Election Day that maybe people will be surprised with?
We're all looking at each other. Going, well, okay. So I'll start with one, and then maybe I'll chime in later. Okay. I don't think we're going to see the high numbers of turnout that we saw in the last election. I think we may be a little closer to a 2004 turnout. Everything we're seeing suggests that it'll probably be in the low 60s of registered voters. So I don't think we're going to see something upwards of 70%. I think we're more likely to see a lower turnout. So that's where I'll start.
Well, I think if you're right, then as I think if people have listened to what we had to say today, then the president's probably in trouble. I mean, if the turnout is really that low. Because I think that the Republicans will turn out, and you know his job will be to get the Democrats out. But I don't have a feel for it at this point.
Yeah, I mean, if it is around like say 63%, that's not good news for Barack Obama. But they claim that they have this firewall of early voters that can protect them against these great numbers of Republicans who are going to go out on Election Day. I'm looking at the long-range weather forecast. It's not going to be too bad on Tuesday, which generally helps Democrats. But I think Eric's exactly right. It is not going to be the massive turnout that we saw 4 years ago.
If the polling equipment breaks in Hamilton County, is the entire country going to be waiting for that? Is Hamilton County going to be the center of this election?
Well, I think it's going to be a very important piece. I'm not sure it's in the center, but it's going to be a very important piece of a very important puzzle.
Yeah.
Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Impact Cincinnati on 91.7 WVXU. My guest today, Xavier University Assistant Director for Philosophy, Politics, and the Public Honors, Jean Beaupre, UC Professor and Co-Director of the Institute for Policy Research, Eric Rademacher, and WVXU's political reporter, Howard Wilkinson. Archives of our programs are available on our website, WVXU.org. Producer for today's program was Pete Reitmeier.
Support comes from the Murray and Agnes Season Good Government Foundation, encouraging citizen participation in public affairs.